Okay, the Missouri Baltimore Rosh Chodesh program is sponsored in memory of Faye and Nathan Holtzman, and may all the learning that has been done through this entire series be an aliyah for their neshamos. Tonight, our Rosh Chodesh Sivan sponsors are Cindy Ring, Le'iloi Nishmas, HaBachor Chaim Yaakov, Ben Michal Simcha, whose yahrzeit is the 25th of Iyar, and Julie Meister, in memory of her parents, Avram Moshe Ben Tzviol and Leah Bas Mordechai. May the learning done be an aliyah for all of their neshamos. It is my pleasure to turn the program over to Mrs. Jacqueline Sova. It's always a treat when Jacqueline can fit us into her very busy schedule. On top of being an educator, she also is the executive director of BGQ, the wonderful organization, which is hopefully cultivating young women to one day be Miss Silver members also later in life and giving them an appreciation for learning and for Torah. So I'm going to turn the program over to Jacqueline and we will get started.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. I think I've told this to Andrea before, and I've said it behind Missouri Baltimore's back, so that's how you know I really mean it, that this, I would say this room, but, you know, especially when we're in person, is one of my favorite rooms in all of Baltimore. This group of women who's just so sincere and driven to learn, to grow, to just be transformed. It's really amazing. I far prefer being on the audience side with you, but I definitely very much appreciate the opportunity to learn Torah with you tonight. I think, you know, every time that a Yontif comes, different speakers make it sound like, you know, this Yontif is the most important Yontif. This is the one whose power, you know, whether it's Rosh Hashanah, this is the Yontif. And then, you know, we can transform ourselves in Yom Kippur, this is the Yontif. And like, it feels like the gates are never closed, right? Some chassid somewhere said it goes until Hanukkah, but then Pesach's amazing. So I just think before we go in, and I will get very excited about Sivan and Shavuos, and I know this year we learned Hanukkah together, which really, really is one of my favorites. But I just want to start off by saying that I read recently in Rabbi Danishevsky's book, Attached, that really from the Torah's perspective, a Yontif or a Chag is called a Moed. Hashem specifically calls it a Moed, which means a meeting place. And if that's the case, if this is almost, you know, a date opportunity with Hashem Kiviyachal, then yeah, this is the most exciting. The Rav is not being silly by saying this next one's my most favorite. If the next date opportunity with Hashem is the next one coming up, then it is. Then I am really excited about it. It is one of my favorites. So here we go. We will jump in. I will share my screen. Correct, Andrea? Okay, I'm going to share my screen. And I'm very excited to learn with you. Here we go. Okay, I have, let me just make it a little, make it smaller, sorry. Okay, is that good? You guys can see? Okay, here we go. So as you know, I usually have questions. So as usual, I have four different questions tonight related to Matan Torah, to this season coming up. And the first question is in my first four sources, okay? And that is that the famous thing that happens in Sivan, that happens over Shavuos, is that the Jewish people sit around this mountain and we said the very famous words that we are so praised for, that it's Naaseh V'Nishma, right? We said these words, Hashem, even before you tell us the details, even before I know what I'm signing up for, I am ready to do it. And the Medrash tells us, the Mechilta says, that that was what was so incredible about the Jewish people. Hishvu kulam liv echad kabel machot shemayim besimcha. This showed that we were unified, we were excited, we were really biyachad and in a simcha type of way to accept this Torah. And yet, this is, many of us know that if you look at a different place in the Torah, in Parshas Yisro, that the Chumash tells us, v'yitzyatzvu b'tachtis ahar, that the Jewish people stood at the foot of the mountain, that the Gemara tells us what happened there. Well, what happened there was melamed shekafa kodesh baruch aleim et ahar kegiges. Hashem held the mountain over their heads. Va'amar lam, and he said to them, umutav. Imakabel matorah mutav. If you accept the Torah, great. Ve'imlav sham tehei kvuratchem. And if not, basically convert or die. Right? This was essentially Hashem's version of convert or die. So you're kind of stuck thinking like, well, what was so great about Klal Yisrael saying Naaseh V'Nishma? What was the alternative? If we turn back, we were slaves, right? Forward is, you know, a grave. So what's the alternative? We might as well say yes. So what is the Medrash talking about that we were so united and so excited and happy to get the Torah when it's in essentially, it sounds like we were forced in a very scary way, into accepting the Torah. So that's a well-known question. That's the first question that I do want to deal with. The second, oh, I am so sorry. I don't know what I just did right there. Okay, sorry. The second question, sorry about that. The second question is these two sources. And that is that if you look at the scene of how the Torah was given. So Baruch Hashem, Baltimore, especially in the spring, knows how to do rain well. When it rains, it rains. So recently there was like an insane thunder outside. I don't know if you remember, I think it was last week. And I said to my kids, guys, imagine that, but nonstop with lightning and with really loud shofar sounds and Hashem speaking. Can you imagine how scary, right? And how intense and how awe-inducing getting the Torah was, right? That's really what the Chumash was. Kolos, Brakim, there's a heavy cloud, there are sounds, there's lightning, there's a loud shofar, there's smoke, there's fire, we hear Hashem talking. It's a very intimidating, scary scene. But my question for question number two is, it's so interesting, because if we go to Malachim, we fast forward in time, Hashem has a conversation with Eliyahu HaNavi. And he tells Eliyahu HaNavi, after Eliyahu HaNavi, who's a very zealous, intense personality, after he proved, right, he had a showdown with the fake prophets, the false prophets, and he wins, and Hashem takes his korban, and after that, Hashem says, Eliyahu, come out. And he takes him out, and he says, V'hinei Hashem over v'ruch gedolach b'chazak mefarik harim u'mishaber sla'im. First, Hashem has this insane wind come that basically is whipping through mountains and breaking rocks. And then Hashem says, Lo beruach Hashem. I'm not in the strong wind. And after the wind came a very loud noise, maybe even a thunder of some sort. And Hashem says, I'm not in the loud sound. But Hashem is saying, I'm not in the fire. I'm not in the loud noise. I'm not in the fire. I'm not in the wind. It was the sound of silence. And Hashem is essentially telling Eliyahu, if you really want to find me in quiet moments and in quiet places. Where you really can find me is in the cold mama daka, in the sound of silence. So my question number two is, if that is the case, then why did you not give Torah in the way that we can find you? Why are you giving Torah over in the very places, right, with the fire and the strong noises and all these lights? And it's like a lights and sound show. But you're telling me, cold mama daka, I can find you in the sound of silence. So question number two is, I'm confused. Can I find you in the sound of silence? And if yes, then why are you making the scene so loud, intense, and dramatic? So sensory overload. Okay, so question number one is, I love that we're given compliments for saying Na'aseh v'nishma, but if we were forced, then what was so great? Question number two is, what's with the lights and sound show if Hashem is saying, Kol Dzmama Daka, you can only find me in the sound of silence? And question number three, which is so appropriate, is the Medrash tells us, Melamed She'ein Torah Ketoras Eretz Yisrael. There's no Torah like the Torah of Eretz Yisrael, right? You really want to learn Torah, there's no Torah like the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. And lo chachma ka chachmas Eretz Yisrael. There's no chachma like the chachma of Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Kook explains that what this really means is that there's three unique aspects of this. There's the Jewish people are unique amongst the people, of peoples, of nations. The Torah is unique amongst knowledges. And Eretz Yisrael is unique amongst lands. In which case, that brings me to my next question, question number three, which really the Medrash asks, Lama b'midbar Sinai? Not just specifically why in the Sinai desert, but why in a desert at all? If you're going to give over Torah, then give it over. If ain't Torah, Ketoras Eretz Yisrael, if it's true that there's no Torah like the Torah of Eretz Yisrael, then give it over in Eretz Yisrael. Give it over in the place where it's in an ideal habitat, right? This is where it's naturally at its best. Why are you giving to me in subpar conditions and when it's not at its finest? If ain't Torah, Ketoras, Eretz Yisrael, then why are you giving it to me in a desert? Why are you giving me the Torah in a midbar? That is question number three. And question number four, I'm taking directly from Rav Hirsch, which is the following. You know, it's kind of ironic that if you were to look at the Jewish calendar and ask, what are the most popular holidays? What are the most popular holidays? The most popular holidays is probably Hanukkah, Rosh Hashanah, Pesach. But if I were to ask you, what was the most transformative for the Jewish people? I really think, you can argue it was Pesach, I think it was Har Sinai, I think it was Shavuos. That's what made us not just of taking us out of slavery, but making us into Hashem's people. And yet, says Rav Hirsch, why then is this celebration itself on so small a scale, so quiet and restricted in the Torah to the fleeting span of but a single day? And on that day itself, the celebration is marked by scarcely one positive symbol and is expressed merely in a negative way, by abstaining from doing any work. Only one day, only one quiet day. Only one quiet day for the Torah. Question number four is, if any day deserves to have fanfare and all of these symbolisms, give it to Shavuos, which is the most transformative of us in our history. Why does Pesach get along a lot of drama, a lot of sweat, a lot of attention? Sukkot gets a lot of time, it gets a lot of attention, a lot of guys' effort, a lot of symbolism, sukkah, lulav, honey, right? There's no shortage. Apple, like all these different holidays have so much going. Shavuos is so transformative. Why is it just a day? And if you were to ask me, what do we do? I mean, maybe we could have cheesecake, but you don't even need to, right? Like, what do we do? Nobody knows about it. So just to recap the four questions again, number one, Na'aseh v'nishma. What's the big deal if essentially we were given the option of convert or die? We're like, yeah, no, we're in. And we're like, okay, great, but what was the alternative, right? Okay, that's question number one. Question number two is, if Kol Dmamah Zakah, it's true that Hashem is ideally found in the sounds of silence, why are you giving over the Torah in such a light and sound show? Question number three is, if Ein Torah Ketoras Eretz Yisrael, if there's no Torah like the Torah of Eretz Yisrael, then why are you giving over in a midbar? And question number four is, why is Shavuos so like uncelebrated almost? It's just like, it's just a day with almost nothing. It's a quiet day, a quiet day. So let us begin, and we're going to begin our answer with this Meshech Chachma. So we're going to begin understanding like, that according to the Meshech Chachma, a very important idea, the next few ideas are essential to understanding what we're going to talk about tonight. And that is that the Meshech Chachma argues that when Hashem held the mountain over our heads, what it means is not that Hashem forced us into it with a convert or die option, but what the Meshech Chachma argues is Pirush, Sheher Alehem Kavod Hashem b'hakitz u'b'hiskalos nifla'ah ad ki mamash batla b'chira sam hativi. What that means, according to the Meshech Chachma, is that it's not that Hashem threatened us with a convert or die option. It's that Hashem gave us, for one time in Jewish history, a 2020 vision of Him in such a way, with such clarity, with 100% clarity, that in essence, we did not have Bechira. Not because Hashem took away our Bechira, not because we were no longer human. But if you think about what free choice and Bechira is in those moments when I'm not sure what's right, when I'm not sure what to do, I'm not sure, it's, things are gray. When, think about an example when things are not unclear, right? When you walk out of the classroom, say thank you to the teacher or don't say thank you to the teacher, right? It's black, right? It's a clear thing. You say thank you to the teacher after class, right? That's easy. It's black and white. It's very polite and nice to say that. There's no gray there. When it's a 100% clarity, there's no free choice because it's so clear, there's no other. Hashem essentially made things so clear on purpose. V'hayu muchrachim kemalachim below hevdel. And I bolded that on purpose. They were essentially, for this moment in Jewish history, like angels with no difference. If you think about what the experience of an angel is, and this is going to be very important at some point of this tonight, an angel's experience is not necessarily, and I once heard this, it's not necessarily that angels and malachim don't have free will, but when your entire existence is standing before Hashem 24/7, you have such clarity, you don't have bechira. Does that make sense? I'll give you an example. My students were like, no, but you still do have free will. I said, guys, if the principal walked into the room and gave you his keys and said, I'm rushing, but I need you to get something out of my trunk, what are you doing? They said, of course we would go. I said, but what if you weren't so in the mood? They said, no, of course we would go. The principal asked us to go, you go. I said, what if it was like drizzling a little? They said, no, Mrs. Sova, you don't say no to the principal. I said, okay, now let me ask you, what if your friends came in and your friend said, can you do me a favor? Can you just go to my car? And let's even say it's sunny outside. They're like, no, I would tell my friend, go get it yourself. So what's the difference? You're the same person in the same scenario with the same energy levels. What's the difference? Is that when the principal walks in essence, you don't have the, there's no saying no. It's 100% clarity. I say yes because you're the principal with 100% clarity. Hashem revealed himself. Now the question is, why did Hashem have to reveal himself? We know we've learned this before together a few years ago that Hashem is a kel mistater. Hashem prefers to remain hidden. Hashem does not like coming out and making himself obvious. So what was so needed? Why did Hashem feel the need to come out in such a dramatic, obvious 2020 vision type of way at this moment? And this is important because the Maharal, I keep doing that. I am so sorry. I have a touch screen and I am forgetting that I should not use it here. The Maharal says, the reason why this was so important for this time to give 2020 vision is because if we did not accept the Torah, when Hashem says, Sham Tehek Furatzcham, it doesn't mean I was giving you a threat sentence. I wasn't giving you a threatening you. I wasn't giving you a death sentence. It's that Kilo Lomar ki ha Torah hi hachrichit la Kabbalah ve'im lav ve'im loy kabbalah Torah. Sham Tehek Furatzcham, which it means is that the world would cease to be. Without the Torah, the world would go back to Sohu Vavohu. Without the Torah, the world won't be. Hashem had to, for one moment in Jewish history, come out and make himself so clear to us that it's so obvious, the benefits, the importance, Hashem, you run the world, you wrote this Torah, so clear to me. One time in Jewish history, where it's so clear because we needed to accept the Torah, because if we didn't, the world would cease to exist. And how do I know this? Because anything that is it that happens is already finds its roots in Bereishis. In Bereishis, in Perek Aleph, it says, after the end of creation, Hashem creates the whole world. Hashem saw everything that he did, v'hinei tov ma'od. Hashem created an amazing, amazing world. V'hi erev, v'hi boker, yom hashishi. It was the sixth day. And says Rashi, you know, that's so interesting. Because every other day of creation, it says yom rishon, yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, not Yom Ha, the. What's with this extra hey, like the? So Rashi says, you know what? It's very, actually very, very important. That hey symbolizes one of two things, and I think that they're really related. Number one is that the five, the hey, is five bigamatria. And that Rashi tells us to say that this entire beautiful world that I've given you, this world that I've given you, it's all pending you accepting the five books. It's all Tov Me'od. I made a gorgeous world. It's beautiful. But if you don't accept the five books, it won't continue to be. Or, Davar Acher, what's this Hashishi, the sixth day? Says Rashi, it's the sixth day of Sivan, the day we get the Torah. Kulam tuluyim va'odim. The entire world. This is pretty crazy. What that means is the entire world that we that was created was really, its existence was pending, was really dependent on whether the Jewish people standing around Har Sinai would say, we want to bring Torah into the world. And if they wouldn't, the world would cease to exist. You have to accept this Torah. And I have to make it so obvious to how important this Torah is, because if you don't accept it, the world will cease to exist. So I want to take us to an interesting place, maybe an unexpected place. And that is on the week that we learn that we are makabel of the Torah in Chumash is Parshas Yisro. So I want to understand what happens in the Haftorah of that week. Like, does that tell me anything about Kabbalah HaTorah and what it means to be makabel Torah in 2024? So I found something that I thought was very, very interesting. What's that week's Haftorah? That week's Haftorah is Yeshayahu Parag Vav, a very famous scene where Yeshayahu gets his first nevuah. It's in the year that Uzziahu was king, and Yeshayahu sees Hashem sitting on this lofty throne, Srafim Omdim Mima'alo, these angels are standing there, Mima'alo, standing, what it means is they're standing ready to serve Hashem, these angels, Shesh Kanafim La'echad, each one with six wings, Shtai Michasa Panav, two to cover their face, two to cover their legs, and two to fly. The Karal Zeh, El Zeh, V'Yamar, and they call to each other, and they say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malachol Aretz Kavodo. We are taken to a scene of angels, of Malachim. That's so interesting, because you remember the words of the Meshech Chachma? They should resonate with you. Wait, that's so interesting. Do you remember in Sinai, his very words were, right? Do you remember his words were, we mamish. We were like angels at Har Sinai. And here I turn and I go to my Haftorah of that parsha, and it's showing me all about angels. You were once angels. You're reading about angels. Hey, this is like what you were. Except something quite depressing happens when you fast forward. Because all of a sudden, Yeshayahu's vision gets a little interrupted by an earthquake. Because it turns out that Uzziahu the king wanted to give a ketores, a type of korban that really kings can't give, but he didn't listen. So he goes into the Beis HaMikdash. There's an earthquake, and Yeshayahu says, Oili, oi, ki ish tamei tzefasai manochi, I'm impure. And the people are impure. He and we saw Hashem. The king is clearly a failure. I'm a failure. The people are a failure. We're gonna die. I just saw Hashem's vision, and I don't deserve to. They don't deserve to have this, and the king certainly doesn't deserve this. And it's kind of this depressing thought. Like, we just were at Har Sinai. We were like angels. Right? That's Meshech Chachma's words. Vayu muchrachim kemalachim below havdal. At Har Sinai, we were like angels with 20/20 vision. And then you fast forward to the Haftorah and you're like, but how does this end for humanity? You know how it ends? The malachim are still awesome. The malachim are still united and singing together with full clarity of how amazing Hashem is. And where's humanity? You know where humanity is? Not doing so well. Kings are doing whatever they want. No one seems to be deserving of seeing Hashem. Like, wow, that's so depressing. And what's ironic and interesting is that I think that at the Parsha, Parshas Yisro, it's not our Parsha, but that's really where Shavuos happens, gives the answer to this problem. Because of course Hashem knew what humans are. And we're not angels. We were angels for one time. So what are we supposed to make of this? It's depressing. So one time in Jewish history, we stood there like angels having 20/20 vision, like such clarity. And fast forward, and here we are, and everyone's messing up. So what's the solution? What's the answer? So I think that Parshas Yisro gives us the answer. And in there, Hashem says, "Va'aytem tihyu li mamlachas kohanim v'goy kadosh." You are going to become a holy people. And says the Medrash that when Hashem wanted to create the very first human, the very first person, Adam HaRishon, Nimlach b'malachei hasharis, Hashem consulted. He invited the angels to create with him. And Amar Lem, and he said to them, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man. You, the angels, and me, let us make man together. Amru lefanav, and the angel said to Hashem, Ribon ha'olamim, Ma enosh ki tiskerenu. We see how these humans are going to end up. Like, what's he worth thinking, considering? Uben Adam ki tifkedenu. Why are you even considering making this creature, this human? Amar Lahem, and Hashem said to them, Adam zeh she'ani mevakesh levraos, this man that I am intending and that I plan to create, ba'olami, in my world, chachmaso meruma mishalachem. Their wisdom and their knowledge is even more than yours. And says the Sifsei Chachamim Reb Chaim Friedlander, what he means by that is their Torah, B'nei Enosh Ma'alasa Gedula Mitorah San Shemalachim. Their Torah is greater than your Torah. That there's something, ironically, even actually more special and more holy about this human than you angels will ever be. Like, wait, I don't know, but we're failing. The Haftorah makes that very clear. How are we meant to be better and holier? So I want to share a Maharal that is stunning. I have to give credit where credit is due. I originally heard it recently, quoted by Rav Aaron Lopiansky. And it was he quoted it in two different places. Sometimes when you listen to a person a few times, you can hear like their way of thinking, which is very nice. And it became clear that a question that he kept being asked in different communities is like, what do you think is the problem of our generation? Right? So Baruch Hashem, I feel like a lot of people can throw out issues on our generation. There's no shortage. But he felt very strongly that what this Maharal has to offer really gets to the heart of what's wrong with what we need to consider. Let's be positive, what we need to consider to make our generation turn around. And I'll explain it as we learn it. He says, we're learning Pirkei Avos this season. And one of the most famous of the Mishnayos is, right, the famous four questions, right? Ezu Ashir, Hasamech Bechalko, and then the other questions. And he said, it's almost like an insulting Mishnah, right? Ezu Ashir, Hasamech Bechalko, like who's wealthy? Well, whoever's happy with what they have. And it makes it sound like, it's to make someone feel better. Like, okay, we know you didn't really bring in the wealth this year, but like if you're just happy with what you have, like you're great. It's like when your kid brings home certain awards at the end of the year, like Best Smiler Award. And you're like, that's so sweet, but like, is that telling me something, right? Like if, what, right? It's almost like, are you trying to cover up the fact that I actually don't have wealth? And it's almost like a comfort prize here. But does the Maharal know? It's very deep. And he says, no. But there's an essential rule about being human. And that is, it's over here. Yagia kapacha kisochal ashracha v'tovlach. And this is where Rav Aaron Lopiansky argued. He feels like our generation does not have enough of. Not here in Baltimore, in this Mesorah Baltimore chevra, but outside of here, yagia kapacha kisochal means that when a person puts an effort, when a person works hard, kisochal, then you get, when you work hard, when you plant, kisochal, then you eat. Ashracha v'tovlach, lucky is such a person. Lucky is such a person who can work hard, see the fruits of their efforts. That is a lucky person. And says the Maharal, that explains what we're saying. Ezehu ashir asemech b'chalko. What that really means is the following. It's a very special idea. What that means is, imagine that a person, Emir Tzashem by me, got some sort of inheritance, $1 million. I'll take it. Don't you worry. Okay? $1 million. And in that same year, the person worked very hard with certain deals and they brought in $200,000. Which one is really his chelak? Which one really is him? So says the Maharal, no question that a person will enjoy getting the gift. But we ask him which one feels like it has a piece of him, which one transformed him, which one has like made him like, does he feel more satisfaction from? No question, the $200,000. Because what you work hard for, what you work hard for gives you a sense of satisfaction. Like, I can do hard things. I did that. I accomplished that. I created that. And Rav Aaron Lopiansky argued that he's worried that we live in a time where things come so fast and so easy that we're not working hard for anything. Entertainment comes fast, groceries come fast, everything, no one's working hard anymore. Kivyachol, a person who learns how to play an instrument, there's something very satisfying about that. Right? It's hard work. But ashracha v'tovlach, well, how lucky is a person that you worked hard, you're able to do it, that's true simcha. That's a true sense of satisfaction. The hard work, the effort is what makes it satisfactory. I want to be clear. It's not the product. It's not the $200,000. It's the fact that I worked hard and that is what brought it. It's a sense of self. It's a sense of accomplishment. And that is what humans have over Malachim. Malachim were made holy. They are holy. They will be holy. People were made tahor, alokai neshamash nasata bi tahorihi. We're very pure. But tihiyuli mamlachas goanim v'goy kadosh, but you have to become kadosh. Kedusha is in your hands. And the way that we get kedusha is by yagia kapacha ki sochal, working hard, effort, working on ourselves. And that's where Rav Soloveitchik actually fascinatingly says, he says, you know what kedusha is? Soloveitchik says, "V'kidashtem," in a different place in Tanakh, he says, it means, he quotes Unklos, and he says, it means to prepare. Holiness means preparation. It's not a transcendental phenomenon which arrives against man's will. It's not a scene that happens to me, like we had our Sinai, and all of a sudden holiness happens, and now I'm holy. Man must choose it, wait for it, yearn for it. Only then does holiness descend slowly and cleave to us. Each Jew must develop within himself the ability to experience the Ribono Shel Olam. Though we can neither see him nor hear him, we must be able to experience Hashem. I don't know if you can relate to this, but I feel like when I grew up, and I, Baruch Hashem, I'm relatively young, when we sing a Kumzitz, we would sing the same song, and we might be able to sing it three times, and everyone's eyes were closed, and they were really thinking, you know? And sometimes I feel like sometimes I show up to a Kumzitz now, and people are going from song to song to song to song, and they're like doing like hand motions like while they're singing, and I'm like, you have to be able to feel Hashem and think about Hashem and yearn for Hashem and have Kedusha enter. You have to become a person who's making an opportunity in a moment with and for Hashem. I thought this was so beautiful. So let's just for a second, some of our questions. Was it amazing that they said Na'aseh v'Nishma, or were they forced into it? So it wasn't that they were forced into it. So Hashem gave them 20/20 clarity, 20/20 vision. And he needed to give them 20/20 vision because the world was pending on this moment. In fact, Rabbi, yesterday, I wasn't planning on saying this, but literally yesterday I went to Rabbi Gross's shiur, and he said, I believe he quoted the Vilna Gaon, who has different names for each of the five books of Chumash, and Shmos he called Sefer Sheni. He said, no, like, there are a lot of different names you can give. Like, that's not the most creative, like the second book, you know, like we could have done a little bit better than that. Like, that's not so creative. But with this in mind, it really makes sense. Meaning, whatever was created in book one wouldn't be if not for what happened in book two. Book one, for the entirety of Bereishis and creation, is pending the Kabbalah Satorah of Sefer number two. They're united because without number two, book one will cease to exist. So let's come to answer another question. And I thought this was so beautiful. I was so excited when I saw this. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks so beautifully says, so why the desert? You know, if Ein Torah, Ketoras Eretz Yisrael, and if any year where we feel like we, you know, that's so true, this is the year, why the desert? So he says, the desert is a place of silence. There's nothing visually to distract you. There's no noise to muffle sound. He says, obviously, when we received the Torah, there was thunder, there was lightning, right? It felt like it was shaking. But in a later age, when Eliyahu HaNavi stood at the same mountain, after his confrontation with the prophets of Baal, Hashem made it clear, right, that he can be found in the cold Mamazaka, in the still small voice, literally the sound of silence. And here's we go, and I absolutely love this paragraph. I define this as the sounds you can hear only if you are listening. In the silence of the midbar, the desert, you can hear the medaber, the speaker, and the midubar, that which is spoken. He took the same word, midbar, and said midbar, a place that is usually silent. It's true that Har Sinai was an exception, but the midbar is a place that's usually one where there's no distractions. And in the midbar, let's change the nekudos, so that's where you can hear a medaber, the speaker, and the midubar, that which is spoken. From time to time, we need to step back from the noise and hubbub of the social world and create in our hearts the stillness of the desert, where within the silence, we can hear the cold mamataka, perhaps have moments of midbar moments. We need to be able to create midbar moments amid our very busy, hectic schedules. Shabbos is a perfect example. But even in our day, I don't know if it's in your car, I don't know where it could be for you. A midbar moment where you close your eyes and you can connect to the medaber and maybe try to hear the medubar, what he's trying to tell us. And that is why Shavuos is the way that it is. Because Shavuos is a midbar. It's so silent. There's no noise. There's no distractions. There's no, you know, everyone take out the different symbolisms and songs and, you know, Mora's projects. It's the still and silent day of Torah. With no adornment or symbol, enters your life. Strange it is how in all its stillness, this day of revelation, Shavuos, is so impressive, in all its silence, so eloquent. in spite of the absence of any symbol so full of significance. That's the point of Shavuos, is to go back to the Midbar, where there's no distractions, no noise, and to hear the Medaber and the Medubar, to connect with Hashem and His Torah, the Medaber being Hashem, of course, and the Medubar being His Torah. This is the final reason why the Torah rejects any symbolic expression, and even any designation of Shavuos as the Festival of Revelation. From the very beginning, it should be clear, should clearly be conveyed to us that the Torah, the quintessence of all that is good and precious, is not satisfied that we devote a festival, be it a day, a week, or even a month to it. The Torah demands of us the dedication of every hour and every moment throughout the year. Hashem designated the Torah to be the soul of your whole life. That it's true that for one day a year, we thank you, Hashem, when we relive this acceptance with simcha, where we're in our proverbial midbar to connect with the Medaber and his Medubar. But Torah is an everyday thing. And every day we have to find moments of midbar moments where we're connecting with the Medaber and the Medubar. And that brings us to perhaps one of the most beautiful depictions that the Medrash has to say about what happened at Har Sinai. It is true Hashem held the mountain over our head according to the Medrash. But I want you to think for one second. Stay with me visually. Where are the Jewish people standing when they got the Torah? They are told to stand around the mountain. I ask you, if Hashem were to lift the mountain, who is under the mountain? No one. No one is under the mountain. No one is going to be crushed by the mountain. Isn't that so interesting? If we are around the mountain and you lift it, no one's under it. And says the Medrash, that's what happened. That when Hashem lifted the mountain, I think it's so beautiful and such a gorgeous imagery. What happened was that we were standing around the mountain. And you know what happened? We all, biyachad ubesimcha, took a step forward. And what happened was, Bexors, Ben Yehoyada, and many others say that what happened was Har Sinai became our chuppah with Hashem. We chose to take a step under the mountain, Hashem. Naaseh v'nishma, we want this. We're in. And I want you to notice something fascinating about the threat of Hashem. He says, if you accept this Torah, great. And if not, sham tehei kfuratcham. Your burial place will be there. Not here. There. There, far away from Torah, is a life devoid of life and meaning. Here is life. Here is chuppah. Here is relationship. Sham tehei kfuratcham. That's where things are sad and go awry. So now let's go back to our Torah and start to close things up. We were once like angels, and the angels in our Torah are still so beautiful and amazing. And Klal Yisrael Yeshayahu was like, the king's clearly messed up, and I don't deserve this, and the Jewish people don't deserve this. We're just at a bad place. So what are we supposed to do? But if you look more carefully at this Torah, Hashem said, Malachim's very praise was Kadosh, 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 Hashem, you're so holy in time and place and in every way. Malok hola art kavodu Hashem, you fill the whole world with your presence. And the Haftorah ends by Hashem saying, Et mi ashlachu mi yilech lanu, who can I send and who will go for us? And Yeshayahu raises his hand and he says, Hinani shlacheni, send me, I want to go on your mission. And Rabbi Dr. Julius Hirsch says, that when Hashem asked, who will I send and who will go for us? The singular of the first question, meaning who will I send, is followed by a plural, who will go for us? We surmise that the second includes a reference to Torah. Who will champion my cause and that of my law? At this challenge, the distant descendant of the ancestor who respond to this call utter the same Hineni. The same Hineni as Avraham, the same Hineni as Moshe, the same Hineni as other people throughout Tanakh, to dedicate himself to the service of Hashem. Here I am, send me. Like the Sraphim, who serve you with veiled faces and covered feet, I will devote all my strength to carrying out the tasks for which I will be designated. What the Haftorah is ending by saying is that it's true that Malachim, their entire existence is ready to do the will of Hashem. But then Hashem turns to us and say, "And mi yishlach u mi yilech lanu? Who will go for us? Who will bring Torah into the world?" And every single one of us has the opportunity not just to be like the Avram and Moshe and so many other countless grandparents in our lives. Yeshayahu was saying, "Hineni shlacheni, send me." Every single one of us, that's the medubar. That's the sound that Hashem is saying to us every day. And as Rabbi Jonathan Sacks wrote in his book, A Letter in the Scroll, he wrote, more than the Torah, more than the Bible is interested in the home God made for man, more than we're interested in creation and the world that Hashem brought Adam into, it's concerned with the home man makes for God. What will we do with our lives? Hineni, are we bringing Hashem into the world? And this is so beautiful, because if you look at the words, Hashem fills the whole world, says the Tanya, it means that when you learn Torah and you do mitzvos, Hashem, this is Hashem's home. We need to make this Hashem's home. And you know what he says? I bolded it for you. When you learn Torah and you do mitzvos, you fill the whole world with Hashem's kavod. You make a place for Hashem here. You are the Yeshayahu's, and you are the Moshe, and you are the Avram who make a home for Hashem. More than Hashem cares about the home he made for you, right? Hashem made us a home. That was the first few prakim, the first few chapters of Bereishis. From then and on, it's a challenge to humanity. But will you be able to make a home for Hashem? Will your actions, will the things that we talk about, the things that we do, is that a place where Hashem wants to live? The Yamale, you can make the world filled with Hashem. But to close up, I thought that this was so beautiful that Rav Huttner once had someone come over to him and felt like he was living a double life. He felt like he was living a double life, a Torah life and a secular life centered around his career. And he wanted to get advice from Rav Huttner. And Rav Huttner responded with a metaphor. And he said, if a person has a home and then he also lives in a hotel, you're living a double life. If you live in a hotel and you live in a house, you're living a double life. But if you have a home that has two rooms, you're not living a double life, you're living a broad life. By placing it all under one roof, there is a broad unity. There's a broad life, not a split life. Behold, derechacha de'ehu, know him in all your ways. And that is what it means. What it means is that it's true that the malachim are holy, and they will always be holy, and they stay holy. Do you know where they're holy? Up there. Our job is to be like the angels, like the seraphim, who are Hineni, I'm here to serve you. But by bringing Hashem's presence down here, and that is more kadosh than anything that the malachim can do. And I thought that this was so beautiful, this next piece, that piggybacking on the fact that we saw the sounds. At Har Sinai, we're told, V'chola am ro'im es hakolos, we saw sounds. It's like an interest, right? How do you see sounds? So if Ephraim Goldberg, and I'll read it directly because it's so beautiful. Some speakers are talented at communicating ideas. They are well organized, articulate, and effectively transmit the information, idea, or concept. Yet as successful as these speakers are, their content remains intellectual, cognitive, and abstract. Much more rare and unusual are those speakers that are able to paint a picture with their words. Their message is so compelling and persuasive, the listener not only hears what they are saying, but sees their vision and pictures themselves living the life being described. This information doesn't remain abstract and theoretical, but it's absorbed by the listener such that they can envision themselves transformed and behaving differently. The giving of the Torah was undoubtedly an educational pedagogic experience. Laws and rules were communicated and transmitted to a nation that was now bound to observe them. For most people, law is dry, sterile, and uninspiring. Law books and different code, right? These statutory codes are for reference only and are grossly unexciting and monotonous. One could easily have mistaken Matan Torah as an information session, an intellectual transmission of the new laws incumbent on the people. Perhaps the Torah is telling us that this description couldn't be further from the truth. At that fateful and faithful moment at Sinai, Hashem painted a picture for his people of a purpose-driven life, of an existence that is sacred and sanctified, of a lifestyle that is extraordinarily rewarding and spiritually satisfying. Perhaps v'chol ha'am ro'im es hakolos, that they all saw the sounds, means they didn't hear about 39 categories of forbidden creative labor on Shabbos. They saw what a Shabbos is like. They felt the serenity, tranquility, and rest that Shabbos provides. They heard the laws of Shabbos, but they pictured the Shabbos table filled with family and friends. They smelled the cholent and tasted the chicken soup. At Har Sinai, they didn't just hear about the details, laws of the prohibition against stealing. They envisioned an ethical society and pictured themselves submitting honest tax returns. Indeed, Har Sinai is a defining moment of our history, not for the laws that we heard, but the pictures and the images that we saw and became the vision of a lifestyle that is divinely enriching and elevating. That is what it means to live a broad life. That there's nothing in your life that cannot bring Hashem into it, and being able to understand that you and the life that you live is changing the world and making a home for Hashem in everything that we do. And that's really the point of Har Sinai. The point of Har Sinai, just to answer some of the questions again, is no, we were not forced. We needed 2020 clarity. We needed full. There was no other. It wasn't that Hashem froze our Bechira. It wasn't that Hashem threatened us. It's that when you have such 2020 vision, there's no other. The choice is so clear. And why did Hashem have to do that? Because the world is pending on Torah. With no Torah, the world ceases to exist. And that's why Hashem had to make it so intense, both on a sensory level and on a clarity level. The world needs the Torah. And why give it in the Midbar? Because to really live a life of Torah, we have to tap into those Midbar moments. To really and sincerely and authentically find Midbar moments in our lives when we're connecting to the Medaber and hearing the Medubar, what he's saying. And that's really what Shavuos is the ultimate of. It's the ultimate Midbar. It's the Midbar of this is the Kabbalah Satorah and all of its silence, because every day is Shavuos. You have to take the silence and learn how to live like this every day. And with that, I want to say one last source. Rav Emanuel Bernstein says that when Avraham Avinu did not end up giving Yitzchak as a korban, we know that he had a ram that he gave. And the left horn of that ram was used, that the shofar that was blown in Har Sinai was the left horn of that ram. The right horn will be used for Mashiach. And says Rav Emanuel Bernstein, this means, I'm over here, that the process of redemption, the process of Mashiach, which will culminate the arrival of the Mashiach, actually began with the giving of the Torah at Sinai. Right? We already started Har Sinai. For contained therein is everything necessary for the rectification and perfection of the world. The tools with which we elevate our lives and transform the world that surrounds us into a godly place are to be found within the Torah, which we received all those years ago and which we continue to receive each year. And what that means is that the very coming of Mashiach started at Har Sinai. One shofar is because if you tap into the Medaber and the Medubar, which started at Har Sinai, and we really live that way. And like angels, but not like angels who don't have Bechira in this world, like angels with clarity of mission, of Hineni, I'm here to do your Ratzon. Hineni, I'm here to bring your presence into this world. Hineni, I'm here to ask myself, is this what Hashem would want me to do? Is this consistent with my inner Elokos? I have inner Hashem inside of me. Is what I'm about to do consistent with that? Then you bring Hashem more and more into this world. And then Emir Tzashem, Obizocha, the first shofar, the first ram's horn, will lead the way for the second. Because when we really live a life of Torah, authentically, sincerely, for Hashem's kavod, always doing what's right and not what's popular, or trying to do what's right and not what's popular, then we'll be Zocha to hear the second horn, Emir Tzashem, Bekarov, Mamish. Thank you so, so much.
That was
Thank you so
beautiful,
much,
Jacqueline. Thank
Jacqueline.
you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so
You're
much.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so
Thank you,
much, Tom.
Jacqueline.
Beautiful perspective on Shavuos.
Thank you.
And it was very
Can't
clear.
wait for Jacqueline to give us a shiur in the summer, which she will be doing. Keep
Good.
hold
Thank
tight to
you.
that
Thank you.
information.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully,
Very much.
we'll see everybody
Thank
tomorrow
you.
night in person at 8 p.m. Have a
Bless
great
Hashem.
night, everybody.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. Hi, Esther.
Thank you, Andrea.